For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.
To you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Conan.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkon, and Dennis Dick is here, but he's not, but he is. He's just late, but we start without him because that's how we roll here at Benzinga. The show must go on. Well, what are we going to talk about today, guys? I wonder.
I think Dennis is at the beauty parlor getting his hair done.
That could be. That could be. We can talk about the Fed. We can talk about that. We can talk about gold. I saw someone just mention GLD. Oh, Dennis is back from the beauty parlor. Does he look beautiful? Let's see.
Back from the lavatory.
Okay.
Pre-game pee.
That's okay. The show must go on. We can talk
no
about
no brush in there.
I knew I was tight, but I was like, I got to go to the bathroom.
You got to put a brush in there, man.
So a brush?
Just, yeah.
What do I need a brush for? You're telling me I'm not beautiful? Hair is so beautiful.
Always beautiful, Dennis. You're always beautiful. It's
Joel O'Connor, Spencer Israel, and Woody Woodpecker.
Look, beauty is like the market.
I'm taking offense to that.
Beauty is like the market. It's what's on the inside that counts.
Sorry, guys. Go ahead, Spencer. Go
all right. Yeah, let's go ahead. We'll talk the banks. We'll talk gold. We'll talk the Fed. We'll talk Corsair. Some interesting insider sells this week. We got a couple of earnings yesterday, today. Maybe we'll cover those as well. We'll get to questions from our chat. Two guests on the docket today. First up, 8:35, the cow guy, Scott Shalady, will be joining the show. We always love Scott. And then at 9, we'll have Peter Tuckman live from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. In the meantime, everyone do us a favor. Go ahead and hit that like button. Hit subscribe if you haven't already. And let's bring Joel's charts on the screen here in a second.
Oh, yeah. Joel,
tell us how we are reacting.
It's choppy, man.
How are we digesting? I need to digest the news.
Man, I'm the one that's so jumpy about the S&Ps moving around, but it was you guys that were catching my attention here. We're chopping around pretty good. Let me get that one-minute chart off there. That is a no-no. We don't look at one-minute charts except at certain times during the day. Lower open, and then they plowed it right through that low from yesterday at 90 and a quarter. By the dippers came in, and now the battle for 4,200 is on once again. Down 12 and three quarters handles right there at 4,200 and a quarter. Crude down 14 cents after almost kissing 73 yesterday, getting to 72.99, down 13 cents. Gold getting absolutely crushed. Oh, man. Next time that thing gets back to 1900, if it ever gets back to 1900, I'm out. I'm done with this gold.
How long you had gold?
I'm pre-COVID, before COVID.
Are you up in it?
Yeah, not as much as I was yesterday.
Or 2 days ago.
I'm done with it. Silver, that's down $1.32 in the 26 handle, 2650. Bitcoin, man, 40K. Should I stay or should I go now? Up $545, 39,110. Just can't clear 40 and stay over 40. And let's call Ethereum flat here at 24.17 a quarter, down a couple bucks. So, Dennis, you used the word transitory a lot when talking about pump and Powell, but you got a new word. You got a new word that persistent.
Powell has a new word.
Yes,
persistent. Powell. That word spooked the market. That's your reason for the sell-off. Spencer Israel, give us the details from his comments, because that is when the market rolled over. It's the new word, persistent.
Well, the first thing I did when the statement came out was to control F the word transitory. One mention of the word transitory in the statement, and then in the press conference, only two mentions, one of which came from a reporter. So transitory looks like got put on the back burner yesterday. The word persistent got six mentions in the press conference, basically as it relates to inflation.
Yeah.
Turns out that inflation could be more persistent than they expected.
Holy wow, these guys are geniuses over here. They've got it all figured out as they chase what everybody else already knows. So of course it's persistent. It's not going away. We know that. It's just whether the Fed was going to acknowledge it or not. But they've acknowledged it, which I'm very surprised, actually. I would have thought he'd stick to the transitory talk. It's going to be the same type of thing. The banks thought the same thing before, obviously, as well, because they were selling off into it. They got a relief pop yesterday, and for good reason, because that's a big change in tone when you go from, you know, calling the inflation transitory to persistent. And they did talk about potentially raising rates now 2 years from now, so the market will probably just forget about it in a couple days. But there was good reason for the sell-off yesterday. I was actually surprised at the Fed commentary.
Well, what their argument is essentially, look, inflation was so low for so long. Our target rate of 2%, we're just going to make that that's going to be our target for like the long-term average. So because it was so low for so long, now we're going to let it go above 2% for a while. As long as over the long term, I don't really know how long long term is, but as long as over the long term, inflation average is 2%, we're okay. So for now, it means above 2% is the name of the game, essentially.
So what does this mean? The immediate reaction is what you would have thought when the Fed does move from that word transitory and says persistent five times. Banks get a lift. They sold off into it, into the Fed meeting. They did. So a little bit of a relief pop. That continues a little bit here this morning. I mean, go to Citigroup and see how hard, Joel. This was significant. We were $80 a week and a half ago. We kissed 70 yesterday, $70.15. Yes, we got a little bit of a bounce right at 70, where you'd think, you know, psychological support plus kind of where we bought them in March and April. Does this make you want to buy the banks? If he's going to acknowledge now, and we are seeing the U.S. dollar, obviously, you know, we've seen this weak U.S. dollar. It did show some strength yesterday after the Fed meeting. Does this make you want to own the banks?
Not really. Not really.
Why? Why not? Just the technicals are still all broken on them?
I mean, if rates aren't don't you want higher rates for
But Joe, the tone changed. So I would say that the tone, there was no way, you're not just raising rates. It wasn't even on the table. They were not raising rates yesterday.
But can you imagine?
There's the process, right? So they're way behind in the process. And we know Powell doesn't want to have to do it. But now he's acknowledging that the inflation problem might not just be transitory or temporary. It might be, in some places, more persistent, which we all know is the case, but the Fed's actually acknowledging it now. And if they're going to start acknowledging that we have persistent inflation, that means that they might stop the printing press to a set or slow it down. And maybe, just maybe going out, we start to think about raising interest rates. So it's a change in tone that the market hasn't really seen from Powell. Before, you know, we're like, we're getting inflation data. The Fed's got to do something about it. And they've just, you know, they threw this transitory word out there just so they didn't have to think about it. Well, now they're starting to realize, hey, we might have to start thinking about inflation. So it's the process that starts to lead us to think that, hey, maybe this free money policy that's been running for the last 10 years rampant, if you want to talk about stuff running rampant, maybe, you know, the light or the darkness at the end of the tunnel for the markets is there. Not saying you got to go out and sell all your stocks, but if you're starting to think about inflation, if you're starting to think about potentially raising interest rates even a couple of years from now, maybe they start thinking about buying back those banks they've been selling for the last week and a half.
Well, can we at least acknowledge that the Fed was doing its best to unwind itself from the QE, right? 2015, they raised rates, right? 2016, 2017, 2018, they unwound the balance sheet. They were doing something. The pandemic undid all of that work, but they were at least trying prior to COVID, were they not?
Yeah, so maybe now we look like we're getting past the pandemic to a certain extent. Maybe we do think about, you know, a rising interest rate environment. And what does that mean for stocks? It's not happening tomorrow. It's not happening next week. It's even highly doubtful that it sounds like it's going to happen next year. Are these talking 2023? Is it too long for the banks to wait? Do we just go right back into this trade, buy tech, short everything else? Or is this a change? I don't have the answer to that question. I'm throwing out to the chat. I'm throwing out to you guys. This very hard to call.
What Easy Mike says that Powell's run ends next year. Is that true? Is his term up? Because he just may be just doing the backstroke, right? And getting out the door. Is that true? No. I don't know. I don't know if I can. I mean, they're still saying 22 or 23. So it's like, I mean, and I see what you're saying, Dennis. You're saying this is a progression. This is like a step. They don't want to, you know, so each Fed meeting, they'll inch closer to doing
That's
something.
That's what they'd never make drastic moves. This isn't the Fed that just changes on a dime and all of a sudden, okay, well, COVID's over. Let's start jacking rates. This is not this Fed. Powell is very ultra conservative. Well, not he's ultra, he's ultra pro capital markets and easy money. So to get him even thinking about raising interest rates is a step in the right direction if you're bullish the banks.
Well, I'll be damned. Whoever said that his term was up next year, time flies when you're having fun. He got sworn in as chair in 2018, and they served 4-year terms. And so, yeah, that is next year.
He might say, see ya. I'm done.
They can serve more than one.
I know. I'm just being facetious here a little bit. Utilities got hit yesterday too. I mean, overall, still you got to figure the environment for stocks. It's still pretty favorable. If they're gonna, you know, at least maintain this stance for now. Maybe not gold stocks, but interesting day. I mean, Quad Witch tomorrow too, right? So you got a lot of unwinding. It just kind of feels like they're just somehow they're going to figure out how to rally it today, have some stupid rally overnight, and then just pop everything on the open tomorrow. You know, just get everything just juiced up, have a bunch of juicy buy imbalances and just pop them up and hit them. And then we go down. I mean, it just never seems like to have, like, you go down one day, you hard drop, and then you follow up the next day. It's like, oh, there's always that buy the dip. I mean, that was off the low yesterday. That was a 30-handle rally. So, I mean, if you're short stocks or you're short, you know, the spoos or something, I mean, you're either covering or you're letting a lot of profits going away or redeploying. So they do it. They just seem to do it. We'll see what happens in today's session. Is there any only one earnings? One earnings to talk about, Lennar?
Yeah, there wasn't much. That? No, Jabil, Circuit, yeah. Kroger. We had a couple, but nothing.
We had Lennar yesterday, Jabil and Kroger this morning. We can go to Lennar if you'd like.
Yeah, real quick, because I like the it has a technical setup. Yeah, no, good actually, technical setup.
I want to call an audible if I can and talk about Ford.
I do too. Yeah. Ford just broke news at 8 o'clock, right?
Yeah, Ford had guidance as we were starting the show. They see strong. So basically, they gave guidance ahead of estimates. They see strong customer reservations for their four new vehicles: the Bronco SUV, the electric F-150 Lightning, the Maverick, and the all-electric Transit commercial van. They gave some numbers for reservations for each of those vehicles. What else did they say? They're presenting today at the Deutsche Bank conference at 3 o'clock Eastern. If that's your thing, you can check it out there. But they're giving some encouraging reservation numbers this morning.
I don't think the Ford story goes away anytime soon. I'm still long. We know I bought it back when you guys bought around $7.80, I think. It's a double for me at this point in time. I did sell half, so completely playing with the house's money. That was a little while ago. I'm holding on to the rest. I'm and GM, so I'm long Ford. I'm long GM. I'm long Honda. I was long Toyota, but I sold it, and I wish I wouldn't have because that one just keeps going. So that's I'm long the traditional automakers because I think they're all going to be talked about in EV land. They're all coming out with EVs. I think they're all relatively cheap on valuation. I like them all.
Nice pop here. You did have a buck and a half sell off off that 1650 high. That was a couple. It's going to be 2 weeks ago on Friday. Nice pop. What's our pre market high? I just wonder if there's paper stacking up at. At 1550.
Always at the 50 in the buck, the 50 in the point.
Yeah.
And I actually don't.
Do you see anything there? No,
I didn't log in yet, but I can tell you just the way it is. It's 50 cents a buck, 50 cents a buck. So you'll see the paper 1550. That'll stall it out for a little bit. He takes that out. Then he starts thinking about 16. Takes that out. Then he starts thinking about 1650. It's just the way Ford is. You always get up. When you get these rallies, you get up to the next 50 cent increment and it starts to slower down. There's probably where optionality starts on it too. So in the 50 cent increments.
Yeah, just hit 47 and 1.7 million shares traded in that last bracket. So 47, you're got a high at 43. I just I would just be careful because this is deja vu all over again. GM, Mary Barra, talking up her stock yesterday, right? While on the show, that thing went to 63, went right to a daily high. Now, Mr. Market probably had something to do with the sell-off, but get to 1550, things open up. But if you're taking anything out of the GM playbook from yesterday, it was a selling opportunity.
All right, now we can go to Lennar and Kroger and Jabil if we want. Lennar was was out yesterday. EPS beat, sales beat. No real surprise there. They see Q3 gross margins on homes in the 27% range, and they're going to be able to build around 16,000 homes this quarter.
Quarter was fine, but like we talked on the last home builder, it's an environment where it's starting to slow down because, well, and it's going to help if lumber prices start to come down, which they have significantly. But, you know, people are holding off projects with higher input costs. And it wasn't just lumber. It was everything. I know I'm going through a build. Everything got jacked. So if they start to see lumber start to come down, that it's actually good for Lennar, in my opinion. So I know people naturally think, oh, lumber's going up, and that's got to be good. And, you know, it's housing, but home builders, lumber going up, that's their input, so it's not good. And that can squeeze them to a certain extent. So I look at it here. I think Lennar, all the home builders had a really good environment for a bit. I think it's cooled off. If lumber and input price can come back down, then I start getting interested again. But I'm not interested here.
This is a nice setup. I was looking for, like, it's because sometimes I really jacked the home builders onto that. And I'm thinking, man, 96 would have been a great level. But they said, didn't even get to 93. So I think this is pretty simple setup here. You know, you're trading up at 92.17. I think you got to get through 93 and get 93 bid, hold that, you know, and try and keep going. If not, and you come and you take out this 90.53, I know some buyers stepped up ahead of that the last 2 days. And I think you're under 90 and you're seeing 88. So pretty quiet ranges here. Sellers have come down. So if you're not clearing 93, then you're taking out 90.50 and you got some more downside. Spoos are leaking here too. We're down now almost 16 handles. We are down 16 handles at 41.97. So
do we care about Kroger?
No. I was going to go to Jabil because that is up.
That's going sure.
Yeah. They gave strong guidance on top of their earnings beat. Q4 EPS above estimates. Sales guidance above estimates.
Woo!
Guidance for the whole year as well. Earnings and sales guidance also above estimates.
That's a sneaky little stock there, huh?
Yeah, but you got a sell-off in the overall market the last couple of days, and this is getting right near up near the highs. I think you're going to find sellers all over the place here in the 58 handle. So hard to get excited. If I was long this thing, I would sell into today's pop. I don't think this thing's getting over making new highs. Just my opinion.
All right, you did sneak close to 59. You got a little over 59, but number Dennis is talking about is 58.52. That's the all-time high. And, 95. We just lost another couple sticks. What are you guys doing out there?
We just lost another stocks.
Hey, Dennis, cancel bids.
Stop him. Cancel bids. Cancel all bids. Cancel all bids.
What's interesting, too, is that the old time, is that a monthly? Now let me go to the daily. We've 58.52 all time high, all time closing high 57.44. Nope, 57.89. So we don't take out that high. We go under 57.90. I think you see some more profit taken.
No, we don't really care about Kroger.
Who cares about
move away from the earnings if we can. Let's talk about Corsair. This one got a big. I had a big move a couple of days ago. Why, for me at least, remains unclear. Whether you
Reddit. Want, it's not exactly. It's not clear at all. 100% Reddit.
All right. I was trying to be a little bit
more. Reddit gives you gifts. I was trying to be a little
more diplomatic, Dennis, but all right.
When Reddit gives you gifts, you take the gifts. This is what I have learned. If it's not, and Kramer's right, GME, AMC are their own animals, and AMC's like this ape stock. I don't even know. It's different, I guess, apparently, is what I hear. But all these other stocks, let's go through the evidence. Bed Bath & Beyond, triple BY, huge Reddit pop. That's gone. Let's go to all these short squeeze stocks. You know, like there was like Root, and there was like, you know, all these ones that were just all over my timetable.
Woof. What about Woof?
Woof is another good one. Boom, gone. Wendy's, boom, gone. You get these Reddit pops of 20-30% overnight in your stock, you take it. And that's why I was analyzing it. I like Corsair Gaming. I still like Corsair Gaming, but I'm looking at this and saying it's giving me over a 20% pop overnight. It was like 25%, I think, at the highs overnight. You got to take those pops when it's not on news. I mean, these are like earnings beats. You know, takeover premiums used to be 20-25%. Now you just get them out of the blue because it gets some mentions on Reddit. That is a gift. That was a gift. And you know who was taking it? Not just me and Mitch. Who was taking it was every insider at Corsair Gaming. So I'll go through them for you. The CEO on Monday morning sells into the Reddit pop, sells 409,000 shares at $39.82. The EVP of gaming products sells 100,000 shares at $40.70. That was a good one. The director, Bajeria.
It's right there on the screen.
Yeah. 36.71, 2.7 million shares. And then obviously another director as well sold also the same amount, 2.7 million shares, all on Monday morning. They were ready to sell. I want to rebuy my Corsair Gaming with all these insider sells last night. It makes me think, why were they so ready to sell? That spooks me a little bit. I actually had an order out there to buy it at 32, did not get it yesterday, canceled it now. I want to see what just happens with the dust settling here. I still like Corsair Gaming, but concerning that every insider was apparently ready to sell on that Monday pop.
There is selling into strength, right? You got a gap fill if you come down here. I know why you like that 32 area. Gap fill at 32.63. So maybe you come down here. I'd be tempted the first time if it came down there. And then that was the bar that you had before, you know, before the Reddit pop that closed at 32.36. So you've come down hard. I think if there's some shorts out there or people still feel like it's a good company, kind of looks like that 32 to 32.63 is a buy zone. And right now someone kind of likes 33. I mean, we've hit 33 a few times and bounced. So we've got a patient buyer at 33 right now.
Workhorse, Clover, the chat's giving them all out. All of them. Held up for a couple of days and then gave it back. NAKD, KOSS, $42.23. When Reddit gives the gifts of money, take the money. That is, you know, been the better play. Not to buy when the starts going up, you know, 50% or 100% on Reddit. The play has been to sell it on.
Is it? But if they're going to start, like, isn't there some bad? I mean, are some Reddit people going to get mad at other Reddit people? I mean, there's got to be some people that are. Well,
they're always mad at each other. That's
really.
They're usually mad at. Well, they're going to start getting mad at Kramer.
That is
Kramer. Cramer on Wall is at war with Wall Street Bets, apparently, here. Some of the tweets he was saying last night. Can we find some of the Jim Cramer tweets from last night? Yeah, Mitch, you were reading them out. There was like, he's at war with Reddit right now.
Yeah,
I thought he was buddies with all the Wall Street Bets. Now he seems to be at war with them. So I don't know which side he's on.
Can you put some bids
You told me to cancel my bids, Joel.
Okay.
Anyways, where are all these tweets from yesterday? WSB, keep your firepower for AMC and GME. There is too much money being lost on your other names. You might be able to keep buying AMC or GME up here if you keep this up. Just saying. Corsair Insiders got the top tick thanks to Wall Street Bets. And the people believe in Reddit, Wall Street Bets? They got had like on Wendy's and BGS and Woof. It's such a scam. This is from Jim Cramer. Here's a great one. The insiders were ready. This is what I was talking about. I actually sent that to Jim Cramer last night, just tweeted at him. And then he quickly, about 10 minutes later, tweeted that out. And didn't credit me for it, but that's
okay. You know what? Here's my theory. You ready? Jim Cramer's not in a good mood today. He's not in a good mood today because he's a Philadelphia sports fan. And the 76ers were up by 25 points last night, and they lost in the playoffs. So he's in a really, really bad mood, and he wants to fight.
I didn't even know he was a basketball fan.
He's a Philadelphia sports fan. So he's
Eagles.
Tweeting about it this morning. So that's my theory. He's in a bad mood. He wants to fight.
But these were coming out last night at like 5 o'clock. So anyways, he's at war, it appears, with Wall Street Bets here right now. You know, I'm saying I'd sell him the Wall Street Bets pops here too, because this has been the play here for the last while. Besides GME and AMC, which kept going, maybe there's going to be another buy opportunity. Maybe there's going to be another short squeeze. But you know how many messages I get? I would say, on Twitter, I probably get, between 50 and 100 messages sent to me a day, like questions about stocks. And, like this is, sent via, some are direct messages. Some are, sent, just tweeted at me. What do you think of this stock? What do you think of this stock? I've got to say, I'm just ballparking it. Probably 75% of the questions I get are about Wall Street Bet stocks, like the 10, the 12, or the short squeeze stocks. What do you think of this one? It's got a high short interest. Probably half of the questions I get from people, this one's got a high short interest. What do you think? This one's got a high short interest. What do you think? And I'm like, well, this has been kind of the play for the last week, but does that continue? Do they continue to just buy up every stock that's got, 10% or 15% or 20% short interest on it? I don't think so. I think this was the flavor of the week. I think we've moved away from that short squeeze trade. Is it going to come back? Well, it went hard in January, and we had another run of it right in June. So is it going to come back eventually? Yeah. But if you're still combing through, where's the next short squeeze stock? I think that ship has sailed, kind of. I don't think that's the next stock. We're going to squeeze this next one. And there's always going to be something they're talking about. And like I said before, I give Reddit a lot of credit. They really can move stocks when they, team up. They really are moving stocks, and you got to be aware of it. But the rallies, for the most part, Cramer's right, haven't been holding.
Yeah.
Gold continuing lower now, down 84 bucks. Jesus, they're just taking this out to the woodshed. Yeah. $100 day, $100 down day. Can that happen in the gold market?
I don't know. Silver, too. Silver's getting hit harder, Joel. Down 3.5% here this morning.
Actually, it's not. I think it's all commodities. I saw platinum, too. I think it's really just all the metals.
Started with lumber, and now it's starting to come off. Right. Deflationary trade all of a sudden.
So this is to Jerry's credit, this price action here. Well, with the commodities going
well, they all come in. Lumber. Yeah, he won't have to talk inflation as much here. So yeah. You start to see everything come down. I mean, still, let's give a perspective. Lumber was what, $300 or $400? Went to like $1,700 or $1,800. Now it's back down like $900 or $1,000. So I mean, we're still way up from where we were a year and a half ago, but we've come back down to at least, it makes some sense here. But yeah, you're right, Spencer. This is a commodity sell-off here, and it's pretty substantial here this morning.
So what are we buying? We got to be buying something. We're selling commodities. We're selling metals. We got to be buying what? Bitcoin, ETH. We're buying airlines.
We don't have to always be buying something. It's been the market that buy the dip has worked.
Oh, buying puts. Is that what Joel said?
Yeah. Buying puts. But every time we pull back a little bit, we get bearish and they just come back and buy the market back. So I've been sitting with some extra cash for a while. I raised it up again. We know I jacked it back up. I put a lot of it to work a few weeks ago, and I've pulled most of that back out. So I don't know where I'm sitting in my cash portion. Somebody asked me that yesterday. I'm probably like 25 to 30% cash. But like I said, I'm always 10 to 15% cash. I never get to a point where I'm like 100% fully. And this is the long-term investment portfolio, not my trading. My trading's margined, and obviously Bright Trading Capital. Well, not margined, it's Bright Trading Capital, so it's a completely different story. But I don't know. I think you need to think about like not just being fully on margin at this point in time. But I've been saying that for the last couple months. We've had a couple sell-offs in there. We haven't really gone up though either. So the market's a little tired right
every
now.
Single commodity, no, ethanol is in the green. Every single commodity is in the red though, whether it's a metal, whether it's a salt,
Jerry.
Agriculture, soybeans wiped out this year's gains. This morning, sugar, wheat, lumber, we talked about, coffee, cocoa, copper, corn, all down. Everything is down this morning. Every commodity is down this morning.
Beans were in the teens. I saw that. And they still are. Look at that. Ooh, this is how many days in a row? 9 days in a row that the beans have been down. But you know what? Just from like an overall like market perspective, it depends how we end the week, right? And I have a weekly number, obviously, that I figure out on Friday. And we've always been holding that weekly number. That's where we had some lows earlier in the week and we rallied off them. Yesterday, we finally gave way and we had to sell off. So there is a chance that my weekly number that I'll figure with the close and the high and the low for the week on Friday. Also, markets have a tendency to make a high for the week or the low for the week, or the high close for the week on Friday, especially with the quad witch. So there's definitely going to be some. I mean, sellers are going to come down from that 42.58.50. That was the all time high. So from a weekly perspective, we may finally start the week on Monday next week, at a point where we're below the level of control. But hey, we still got all day today, all day tomorrow for this to ferret out. But we're choppy, man. We're whipping around pretty good here, trying to get back over 4,200.
You got tomorrow with the quad witch.
Yep.
And then you have next Friday with the Russell rebalance. It's going to be some volatility for the next. Like we said, I think it's going to go to the quiet summer doldrums here.
Yep,
but we did say this next 7 days, they have some, catalysts here. And so we're going to see some volatility here. Obviously, the Fed has given us some volatility now, which I thank them for. I mean, I love volatility as a trader. That was one of my best trading days yesterday in a long time, because we finally had some volatility. So I know I'm completely correlated with the VIX. VIX gets down under 15, 16, it gets tough. So it's climbing back over 20. It's like, okay, the trading's getting better here all of a sudden. So great day for me day trading and overnight trading. Not so much on the long-term portfolio because it got hit a little bit and it's getting hit here again. So I think you just keep playing the chop. I think expect chop. I don't think we're going to go and they're just going to hammer stocks and crash is imminent. Some people thinking there's a crash imminent. There's too many people that still have the buy the dip mentality. We haven't broken that. We haven't even come close to breaking that. And I think we pull it back 2-4%. You have money managers saying, okay, here's my opportunity. The Fed's not doing anything immediate anyways. And if the market starts to go down significantly, the Fed's going to really, back off, because this Fed has always been, market looking at the markets too, to a certain extent, for their policy decisions, not just looking at the economic data. So it's tough to be bearish.
Do you want to cover the disaster of the day now, or do you want to do that after?
No, tell me. I love disasters.
We already talked. It's the healthcare stuff.
Oh, CVAC. Oh, well, I wasn't sure where you're going with that, because it could have been
What else?
Well, Lordstown Motors, maybe not yet, but they did clarify, as if we all didn't already know this, that they don't actually have any binding orders for their Endurance. Yeah. Yeah, duh. Duh. But anyway, CureVac is the one Dole's referring
to. In any other market environment, this Lordstown Motors, it's such a forgiving environment. But in any other market environment, this ride would be like flirting with like a lot lower prices.
Yeah,
but this is the market that just continues to forgive, I mean, look at the evidence here. You know, one, you know, we've got, you know, obviously these orders. They said we have orders. Now we don't have any orders. We have the CEO and the CFO said we're out of here. We have, you know, financing concerns and whether we can even give enough money to start production. It sounds like just everything fundamentally sounds like an epic disaster. But we're in this environment where the market is disconnected from fundamentals in a lot of different places. And Ride has been forgiven multiple times. And that's good for our buddy Marcus because, you know, he might just get another shot here again. But I'll tell you, I'm still scared on this stock because if it ever does reconnect with fundamentals, the stock price could be a hell of a lot lower.
Yeah, doesn't make sense. And then CureVac, they had data on their phase one trial for their vaccine. The efficacy of the COVID vaccine for CureVac was 47%, did not meet pre-specified statistical success criteria, though they did have a conference call this morning, talked about the next phase, basically their next trial, how geographically diverse it is, and 40,000 people across 10 countries. Bottom line, though, phase one, not good enough. And that's why CVAC is down 40% today.
Got to 36.69. So
wow, that's a nice pop. This thing's a bullish chart.
This is a bullish chart. I know.
Bullish chart.
What's wrong with us? Truly, what's wrong with us? We're looking at this like, oh, nice rally there. I don't know how you would have stuck your neck out at that level. I'd say instant replay here. I don't think you're going back down there, but there I go thinking again. But if I got to look at this thing between 46 and 47, two monthly lows, 46.12 and 46.5, I think, you know, that's 5 points away. Could you see it? I don't know. If I was short and I missed this, even $50, I mean, people are stepping up. So there's some reference points if you dare touch this thing. I think potential support in the real liquidity market. But that's horrible news, man. I mean, just like don't take the shot. Like don't – like what are they going to do? I mean, that's – I hope they have something else in the pipeline.
That's a nice rally to sell. I know people coming this morning saying, what the hell are you talking about? But I'm like, what did we get down to, 36?
And then we got to almost 60.
Yeah. So the stock, I think you're I think actually the path of least resistance at this point in time is lower. So, but it's hard to call these stocks.
A lot of price discovery.
We did have jobless claims higher than last week. I don't understand what this data means because we're also in an employment shortage. So I don't get it. Let's bring on our guest here, the cow guy, Scott Schilady. Oh, Scott,
great, the cow
good
guy.
Morning. Nice.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
How are you? Doing?
I'm good.
What's good. Going on?
I agree with you. It's great to see the volatility come back for a few days.
We like volatility.
We all love it. You're exactly right.
Commodity volatility here. This is, Scott, this is your type of market, some commodity volatility for you.
Well, you know, we've had an interesting year. We did have Wall Street kind of pile in early, worried about inflation, and they got that right. And we also hit some hotter and drier, you know, weather that's also shot us to the moon. And we also didn't have as much as we thought we had lying around, too. So it was a perfect storm. However, a lot of folks forget that we grow this stuff every year. So you got to be careful about getting too far out of your skis. And we've had some weather sneak back in that looks a little bit, you know, wetter. And so you've seen these things kind of come off. And they're coming off at the same time other things are, too, which is kind of taking a little bit of the teeth out of that inflation argument, at least in the commodity side. And we'll see where we end up. We do have less, you know, corn and beans that we thought we did. So they're going to stay relatively elevated. But, you know, these things are, you know, we can make this go away in one growing season or maybe even a half a growing season, depending on what South America does. So it'll be interesting. It's been definitely volatile. It's been a good year for that. But I'm in the camp that I think that this inflation story I'm still dubious. I don't really think. Yes, we're going to have some inflation, but I don't think it's going to be the big boogeyman that a lot of folks are saying it is.
Well, I think you look at the commodities and you say, "Wow, you know, this was just a crazy move," and for a while, but now we've come off, you know, on some of this pricing. Like, you know, you've seen lumber come significantly back down. You've seen a lot of commodity prices in the last month coming off significantly here. So, you know, even me, I was citing, you know, lumber prices going from $300 to $1,800. This has got to like pass through somewhere. But now that we're back down $900 lumber, you know, you start thinking, okay, well, maybe it isn't going to be. It seems like the Fed's chasing. They go from transitory to persistent. Right at the same time, the commodity prices start coming down.
Right, and you got to be careful. I mean, that lumber market doesn't trade very much. It's almost like a short squeeze meme stock, you know.
There you go.
That's look at the volumes in lumber. So it's hard to use that as an index about what's happening in the housing market, though people do because they don't really take, you know, do the next step. I get a little frustrated because you know, we're coming off a pandemic. We're restarting a $25 trillion, $28 trillion economy, whatever you call it. Well, no one's ever done that in the world before. And so we're using all the wrong words. We're using all the wrong references. You know, I like to hear the government talk about, you know, we created this many jobs this month. No, you didn't. You reinstated that many jobs. You just opened up businesses. It's pretty frustrating. So if we don't have rip-your-face-off economic reports or economic indicators, then we have something to worry about because we're starting from zero. And so once we get these planes, trucks, ships, you know, trains all in the right spot, and we go through this for about 12 months, then you'll be able to take stock about what's actually happening out there and what kind of inflation we really are at. And I'll tell you right now, shutting down the world's best economy of all time, I think we're going to have some serious unintended consequences going forward for probably the next 5, maybe even 10 years. And I'm not a doomsdayer. But I definitely think that will be so damaging, and we only will start to feel those things once we get back to normal. We're not back to normal right now because nothing's coming off of the conveyor belt. And so whatever's there, people are bidding up, and it looks like it's inflation. But I use this example all the time. If your business or your restaurant was shut down for a year and you were allowed, which is a whole other story, but you were allowed to reopen tomorrow night, Friday night, and everybody sat down, you see 150 people at 6 o'clock and they all order at once. Is that inflation? I mean, you're pulling your hair out in the kitchen, but is that something to build a business plan on? Or do you have to kind of wait and see when other restaurants open up and people stop going out to dinner as often because they get used to it again? I mean, right. That's where we're at. I think we need a solid 2 more quarters, probably 3, before we really get a handle on everything. And right now, I mean, the smartest guys in the world are saying that, you know, the economy is booming. It's just reopening. It better be booming. We started at zero, and you flip the light switch on. You know, it's like the patient was dead. Now it's got a heartbeat. Are you expecting the same gain next year? That's my problem.
No, great points there. We're on with the cow guy, as he's known on the networks, also here on PMP. Just talking about commodities, you spent some time on the floor, right? You know, these moves on the upside, right? And I talk about this with Dennis. There's always people willing to sell. And in the commodities markets, you have, you have these farmers and these hedgers or, you know, the lumber companies. And they, I mean, when those prices were going up and they could lock in their shipments for 6, you know, however far the contracts go out, they're out there, they're unloading. So when they peel, when they lose the commercials and the speculative buyers, these guys aren't buying it back. They're not, I mean, they're locking in their profits. And that, you know, that's why these moves are so violent on the downside, is because you have the natural sellers on the way up, right? And they're really not shorts because they own the physical. So when these things come down, they come down hard. And I just wondered if you could just talk a little bit about, you know, the hedging and the being on the floor and some of the orders that you got. I mean, those are the guys that really control the commodity markets.
You're exactly right. And, you know, to your point where they're not going to buy it back. Right. So you've lost that initial, you lost that guy to buy it back on the way down, which can really cause some volatility. But, you know, what you don't talk about is, there's also a lot of volatility to the upside because you've got these farmers and you've got these big commercial grain outfits that they will sell grain on these rallies, but they're selling forward, right? They're selling a futures contract. And when the market continues to go higher, that can also put them in a bind if they don't have enough cash to back up what they've just done because they haven't pulled it out of the ground yet. And so then you get sometimes where they have to blow themselves out and they have to go back in and cover these positions, or they have to go find some money to lend, you know, to borrow to put against the bad margin calls they're getting. They need to have the short on because they're in anticipation of pulling the crop out of the ground, but that adds more fuel to the fire on the upside as well. So we kind of get crazy on the way up and we kind of get crazy on the way down. So when commodity markets are moving like this, it's very, very difficult. And I'll say this, I know you guys are stock guys. I've been in the stock market for a long time myself. But when you think about the three things we can trade in this world, we can trade commodities, and I'll lump everything in there. That's metals, that's energies, that's commodities. We can trade equities, which you guys know about equities. And then we can also trade interest rates products, and I'll throw in currencies in that category. So those three main things. It's the commodities traders. They not only have to look at government reports and what might be happening with this, you know, jobless claims, if that's going to affect what they're trading. But they also have to deal with Mother Nature, who changes on a dime every day. And that's why you see this volatility. So commodities traders have to worry about everything that everybody else has to worry about. And then on top of that, they have to worry about the weather, which makes it very difficult. And a lot of those guys have to be very good traders.
Okay, so Scott, you said you're not a doomsdayer. That being said, you're concerned for the next few quarters. For the moment, for right now, is there anything you like out there?
I'm not a doomsdayer in the sense that I think that the market doing what it's doing yesterday and today after the announcement from, you know, Powell. I mean, where have you been? Have you been under a rock? I mean, how can you get surprised by what he said? You know, and then to see the knee-jerk reaction today, I shake my head thinking, well, what do these people think he was going to say? You know, rainbows and lemonade for everybody? Huh. I mean, it just boggles my mind. And maybe it's just because I'm getting older and I get more skeptical. So I would say, you know, as far as giving stock picks out, I'm not allowed to do that per se because of my licenses. I have to be careful about who my customers are, so I can't really say specific things. But I would say that I'm not afraid of the stock market yet. I mean, and I think that, you know, with the amount of cash on the sidelines, and I know some guys in New York and on Wall Street that still need to be invested, and they're not. I think what you said earlier before I came on is that buy the dip mentality will probably stay with us, even if we have a 5% sell-off, which would be fine, by the way. You know, I listen to the talking heads, and they talk about a rough day on Wall Street this morning. We're down 0.75%. Yeah. I mean, what happened, right? What happened? So I would say I think that my biggest worry is we come back down from this reflation trade and we get back to our normal growth rate of 2 to 2.5%, and somehow Biden gets these tax hikes through, which are historic right now as we speak about them. I think that that's an ugly set of circumstances, and that's not a nice world to be in. And I hate to say it because I don't agree with the Fed most of the time, but I think that they might be thinking the same thing, because why do you want to rush out and stamp out any type of growth we're having while we're reopening, only to have us slip back to 2% GDP and have historic taxes thrown at us? I think that that's what our really big worry is, maybe next spring.
What about this rout in the gold market today? Down $77. I mean, trading range got over 1900. Yeah. That, I mean, I'm sure hope this is a trading range and the 1750 holds here. But what do you think about the gold market?
I think gold is wrestling with the Bitcoin and world, you know, the cryptocurrency world. I mean, is it an expression of worrying about inflation or Armageddon like it used to be? Or there's a lot of folks around the world that are starting to try to apply that to the Bitcoin world or the cryptocurrency world, which I don't agree with, by the way. So I think that right now gold is fighting Bitcoin. And you probably remember earlier this year when we had some people say that, hey, I want to be in Bitcoin rather than gold because I think it's a better hedge against inflation or devaluation. I'm not a big gold fan either. I mean, if you would have had gold since 2011, we made it over 1900, you had a break-even party, which is not the business I'm in. So I would say I'm not a big fan of it. I understand it's a place you might want to put a percentage or 2% of your portfolio in, maybe 5%. But I think that it's right now still struggling to find its identity with this newfound competitor called cryptocurrency, because that's taken a lot of the shine off of gold, no pun intended.
Scott Shalady, a.k.a. the Cow Guys, on the show, getting a lot of love in chat. We appreciate him. We appreciate his insights. We appreciate his outfits. We appreciate the whole package here at Benzinga. Scott, thanks a lot, man.
All right, man. See you guys. Good luck.
All right. Smash the like button for Scott Shalady, a.k.a. the cow guy, the best dressed man on Wall Street.
100%.
Let's do do you want to look at Akamai or not? Because sure. The headline last week we had Fastly with that outage, and they bought the dip on that. Today, this week, we're having Akamai seems to be the culprit behind these outages at several airlines, at several Australian banks, at the Hong Kong Stock Exchange briefly.
Jeez.
And no real volume here this morning to speak of, but Akamai is, if you go to the Twitter, they say, yeah, this is us, we're working on it, but no real updates from that. So last week, Fastly, this week, Akamai.
Yeah. Fastly was a buy the dip opportunity. It got down 10%. It just got silly. This is only down 1%. So they're not hitting. They're not falling for it twice where, okay, yeah, this is horrible news. We better sell it. You know, there's a couple of people sold and it's down 1.4%. The market's down. It's down a little bit more than the market. So definitely the market's not.
Is it offered down?
No, not even at all. Really? The offer's way up at 118. So there's no, and the bid's 115.21. So this is looking like just in line with fair value right now. They're completely ignoring this headline, which maybe is the reason because Fastly was bought on it. So there's no short coming in here and saying, oh yeah, it's bad news. I'm going to hammer those bids because they got burned doing that on Fastly. So they're probably not going to do it on Akamai.
Yeah. You know, it took a couple days too for the Love news to kind of sink in. I mean, that is they had their third problem in a row, right? Right, Spencer? Did you mention that?
I think it's all tied to Akamai. Southwest has had problems for a few days now, but so too has United, Delta, American, and a number of big Australian banks had problems overnight. So and it does appear to be all tied to Akamai here. Not quite sure how. Some DDoS outage is really the extent of my knowledge on there. 8:51. Let's do ticker time. And let's start with Sunrun here because it is running.
What's going on with this? What's the news here?
I gotta admit, I'm not really.
Is there
sure.
a headline here? I saw a bit up last night too.
Yeah. So they had a commentary from Morgan Stanley that was yesterday morning though that was Wednesday morning and it ran all day yesterday and I'm not really sure. I think it could just be retailers
continued upward racing. Pressure from
yeah
are they talking about it on Reddit
they are. They are.
Whenever we can't find the headline, we're like, "Is this? Did this hit Reddit here today?"
They are, but not like to the with crazy volume or anything.
Okay. So this has been oversold for a long time. And now you get Morgan Stanley, who is a very influential broker analyst that gives positive commentary and gives a price target, I believe, of $91. Wow. So today. I thought I saw that anyway. So this is yesterday.
Oh, okay.
So that's why you saw the big pop in RUN, I believe, yesterday. Although Solar had a pretty good day yesterday. You can see some of the other solar stocks, like First Solar was bouncing. Some of the solar stocks did have a pretty good day yesterday. But it's very oversold. When you combine that with an analyst that gets all of a sudden bullish, you can turn the thing around. I'm not sure if there's short interest. I'm not sure if it's talked about on Reddit. But I'm not surprising that the short squeeze could continue, or not necessarily short squeeze, but that buyers could come in here for the next couple of days. 50 is key for it. Can it get up and hold through 50? That's where it kissed up to yesterday. They're trying to get through it this morning, but they're struggling kind of right in the same area again. So I'm going to say yesterday's high, 49.55, all the way to 50. Still remains resistance until it breaks during the regular session. They can get up over 50, then it starts to open up here again. But chart looks okay. I think I'm more of a buy the dip mentality on this one. I'm not shorting into this.
Pre-market high, 51.26. There's your bogey on the upside.
Kyle Smith says, no, we aren't talking about
Sunday. Oh, thank you. We got some Reddit traders in there.
But they are though. Like there are some mentions of Sunrun. I've seen it myself, but not with any crazy volume. So I'm not saying they're Reddit's.
I like Solar. I'm long term. I own SunPower and I own First Solar. I kind of want to own some of the other ones too. I don't know if I necessarily want to own Run, but maybe on a pullback. ENPH I've always wanted. I kind of like on pullbacks here. I like Solar.
Okay. Someone mentioned Corsair. Go tell you, rewind about 20 minutes. We talked about Corsair minutes ago.
Too much insider selling for me to just come in here and buy it right now.
Let me see. Ba, 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 ba. What about, let me just scroll in chat.
Ford, we mentioned, guys. How is Ford doing? We talked about them about 40
minutes. It's continuing higher. It's struggling right where you would think it would. Let's go look at the book. I did open up my book for Mr. Alcon in there, and we're just going to go grab the Ford book and see what is happening. Yeah, so 1550 to 200,000. Look at this. This is right where you can see it's just wide open until about 1550, and then the book thickens up. It's amazing. You know, these traders are reading the book too. The algos that are running it know where it's going to start to get thicker. So 1550, 200,000, 1555, 140,000, 1560, 220,000, 1575, 240,000 shares. What's that mean? It means that's liquidity on the New York book that it's got to chew through to go higher. So you can see like all these other levels are like, okay, there's 10,000, 20,000 here. Yeah, there's 50,000 at 1530, but it takes a lot when you start getting these 200,000 share orders and 250,000 share orders. It takes a lot of stock, a lot of money to push it through there. So natural first stopping point is 1550. Can it get through there? Then you got 1555, 1560, 1575. So basically, it's pretty easy going until you get to 1550, and then the book starts to thicken up. That's just reading, you know, where orders are. So, and looking, you know, where it's going to get tougher to get through.
And you're also not including the volume of the HFTs that are out there at 15.499999, right? Selling, intercepting, leading on to 15, and then scalping it out at 42.43, pushing it back up, doing it again. Kind of, we haven't talked your tractor beam in a while, but that additional volume in there, shorting ahead of it, leading on the size, not paying any commissions, and just bringing it in for 3 or 4 cents, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. So a lot of volume up there. Did sneak to 1551, and then they clamped it down again. But you've had some good volume trading here, right? So and the other thing, too, if it absorbs all this paper and then gets to like 1558 and then comes back down, then be careful as well, because if they take out that size and then they can't dump it out a couple pennies later or 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 cents later, then they'll just be right back hitting the bid and then people locking it down at 15 and 15 and a half again.
Roblox Rocket 1530 is asking about Roblox. This thing is cooled off. It's quiet this morning.
I mean, both trades worked. So if you were buying near that $80 level when we were talking about it, I know it opened high. It opened up at 82 and a half, I believe, and then it came down. But then it came right back to where it was in the pre-market at 80. So your support very well defined. Then it had a nice rip and rally to 86. Predictably, we said on the show that Kathy Wood would probably buy a lot of stock. She did last night. I don't have the numbers in front of me, how many shares she bought, but she bought a pile of our BLX again. So you're getting a little Kathy pop here this morning. This is DKNG all over again to a certain extent. So I'm not getting it all back, but we kind of thought it could be a similar trade. You even said it, Joel, kind of set up the same way. They did come in and buy the dip, although they didn't buy it at the open, but it was down at 80. It didn't open low enough. What happened was there wasn't enough selling pressure to really knock it down, and then they brought it up right before the open. And then they brought it back down to where it was because it wanted to be around 80. So $80 was the buying opportunity. I traded a couple of times, made a couple of trades on it. I've sold it now, so I have no position on it at all. I thought the Kathy pop might happen, but I actually ended up selling it before the Kathy pop last night because it was trading up and then Spooz rolled over. And I was like, well, Spooz are going to roll over. You're not getting much of a Kathy pop. So you always got to be juggling multiple balls. You know, if the market's going higher, okay, yeah, the Kathy pop's going to be more influential. You're getting a little Kathy pop here this morning, which is nice. It's up about 1% relative to where the S&Ps are. But you've got to be juggling those multiple balls. When you get a significant sell-off in the markets, the Kathy pop is going to be muted.
134,000 shares is what ARK bought in Roblox yesterday in the ARKW fund.
Very predictable. She's very predictable.
Mm-hmm. A few people talking about Novavax. All right. Is there a headline this morning or something?
No, that would be trading up because of the C. What was the company that had the COVID not work?
CVAC, CureVac.
Yeah, so you got competing drugs. Yeah. So that's why NVAX would naturally be up. I never looked at it, but I would naturally think it would be up on that. Moderna as well. Competing.
Yeah, looks like you're right.
Yeah. Next. You have a level for us? You have a level for us on Novavax?
Let me take a look.
190. Just throwing it out there. 190, which is right near yesterday's high, 189.40. That's major resistance. I don't know.
I don't think you're getting back up there. You've already leaked $7. You've leaked $7 off that high. So selling. What was even the high from yesterday? Ooh, 189.40. No, we're not going back up there.
That's solid if we want it back up there.
What about Tesla here? What about Tesla?
Been a couple. I looked at it for a couple days.
Yeah, no, it's been like 2 days. I know.
Just Money said, Mitch went long, sharp. Baby. Money
what do you
Mitch.
Got, what do you got for us on Tesla?
I'm long in Tesla, baby.
You're long?
I want to hear Joel's.
Why?
I want to hear what Joel got to say.
Before Joel, we want to know why Mitch is long.
No, I mean, Mitch wants to hear Joel before he says it.
Okay, go, Joel. Mitch, he wants to know what you think first.
He's looking. This is it's been a trading range here for the last 4 or 5 days, right? And right here, good support between 595 and 600. That's your support. If you picked it up under 600, then you're looking okay. And I think he's not looking for a super home run, but maybe if it could get back up, you know, 618, 620, your 2-day high, 616.79.
All right, now Mitch, your turn.
Why long Tesla?
Well, one thing is I've been seeing EV slowly come back. I mean, if you look at the Chinese EV, XPEV still holding up, NIO still holding up, LI, Fisker still holding up. We've been seeing other EVs run. I've been seeing Tesla reject that 600 so many times. When it came back through it yesterday, looking strong, I said, you know what? I'll take a shot because at least I know my line in the sand.
Where's your out?
My line in the sand right now is going to be 590s. I'm going to give myself to 590s. If it can dip today, I'm going to be looking to add closer towards right underneath 600 for red to green. But like Joel mentioned, I would love to see it end the day near that 620.
You can put on any trade as long as you have an out. And this is what Mitch has learned very quickly in his young trading career is he's very disciplined. And this is what makes successful traders. It's not about what you make. It's about what you lose. And if you're willing to cut those losses quickly, you'll stay in this game a long time. So, you know, I applaud Mitch for obviously, you know, always knowing his outs as well. You know, even on the Corsair, he played that way better than me because he was bullish coming down. And then he's like, I cut it. And I tried again. And I cut it. And you kept cutting it. You know, and I didn't. I held on to that thing and I shouldn't have. And it ended up being, you know, I was down significantly. Reddit bailed me out. But, you know, that was just luck. So, Mitch, good job. You can put on any trade as long as you know where your out is.
Hey, guys, 9 o'clock. I'm going to hop and do some extended ticker time on premarketprep.com. Join me. Do that BAC I was asked about earlier, and I'll see you guys at 3:30.
All right, it's time to bring on Peter Tuckman, the Einstein of Wall Street. He's back on Wall Street from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange this morning. Peter, good morning, sir.
Spencer, good to see Benzinga Nation. Hi, guys.
Good to have you back on the floor. What's the feeling out there as the market digests its indigestion from the Fed yesterday?
You know what? These are just amazing days. Look, as a trader on the floor those days, for somebody who's trading sort of the microcosm of the day, Fed days are kind of fascinating. Like David Green always says, we're in a new rule mode, where in the old days when you had expectations about earnings, you were able to sort of, you know, see what people thought and kind of get into the game before, hoping that the expectations are going to be bore out. But in the new world, we really believe price action after earnings and guidance that comes out is the way to determine how to get into the trade. It's kind of the same thing with Fed days. For us that are trading the market on close or the close of the market at 2 o'clock, it just happens to be we start to get into the trade either on the long or the short side at 2 o'clock. On Fed days, that's when the news comes out, right? We get the 2 o'clock announcement about rates being changed or the same. Then we have a half hour to wait until 2:30 until Mr. Powell's press conference, which is all about the narrative and how everybody reads it. So you usually see this crazy, as we saw yesterday, you know, whether it's algorithm run, whether it's keywords that markets reacting to with robo spider trades, or whether it's people reacting to what's going on. Everybody who watched the market yesterday at 2 o'clock, were they anticipating some kind of a change in rates? I don't think so. But so it shouldn't have been a surprise that they didn't change rates. And the market, if anyone looks at the SPY yesterday at 2 o'clock, it sold off 200 points. It just so happened that us on the floor who trade the close did have a huge sell and bounce of about $1 billion. So that sort of confirmed it. But we play the day kind of light because, as you saw, it didn't matter how much there was to buy and sell coming into the close of the market. The market told us what it thought of everything. So it was quick. It was reactive. And the market hit some support down at 422 level, I think, in the SPY, and closed even higher than it was at 2 o'clock. So those are fascinating days.
As someone who's never been on the floor for a Fed day, can you, like, tell us a little bit about what it's like at, like, 158, 159, 2 o'clock, as right before the announcement comes out, and also during the press conference? I'm just curious, because we all know that volume craters in the instant before, right? But tell us about what it's like down there.
Well, so it's fascinating because it also, as I said, it coincides with this wonderful bit of information that we here on the floor get access to every day at 2 o'clock, which is the buy and sell imbalance for the close. So you've got that prediction on what's going to happen. It's the first initial, what we call an alert, right? Mm-hmm. That comes out. Is it to buy big, to sell big? Is it kind of mediocre? And often on Fed days, because it coincides with the initial announcement at 2 o'clock, it's usually kind of small. Yesterday, it happened to be a big sell imbalance. But look, there's a lot of anticipation. We're surrounded by TV sets. Now, once again, we're surrounded by the press is back on the floor, not the photographers, but CNBC is here. CBS is here. Cheddar's back on the floor. We're seeing Spanish TV and other people coming back to the floor. And then you see we're surrounded by screens, and it always says Fed announcement imminent. Everyone is sort of gearing up to it like almost a holiday day because they know that you're about to see a huge gyration in the market. Obviously, people pull back whatever order their flow they have in the market because you can really get blown up. As we know with technical analysis, it's a matter of the price action. At 2 o'clock, yesterday was a perfect example of the excitement leading up to 2 o'clock. And then it's incredibly strong and reactive, right? The market, you know, we get jaded a little bit because on those days, you can see a 250-point move on the downside. It rallied back 125, it sold back 125, and then it rallied back over 250 points. You know, these are huge multi-billion dollar moves and valuations in the market, right? In a short period of time. So we feel the excitement. We're sort of anxious about what's going on the initial announcement. Then things sort of sputter to a halt around the 215 level once people try to figure out, okay, so, you know, this is an auction market. For everybody who thinks that what happened yesterday was the right thing or a bearish or bullish call has to sort of get their ducks in a row and then wait for the narrative that comes out of Powell. That hour-long news conference can be a little bit frustrating because they will really wind through everything. So obviously the announcements he made yesterday was keeping rates the way they were, but you have to really listen for what he's saying. So the inflation story was obviously everything everybody was waiting for. And they did say because it's going to be a 1% raise of inflation projection for 2021, which is the year we're in here, right? It wasn't even a 22 or 23, that in 23 that we're going to start raising rates. So that was one reaction point. Then he said that it's not as easy as we anticipated for people to start getting back to work. And then it's just, you know, in a market that's run by content and words and social media and whatnot, you know, the market holds on everything that Powell says. So if there's a moment of positive narrative or interpretation in his wording, well, the market literally will rally 100 points. And then they'll go, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then he'll wind himself back down into something that's more negative. So that's why if anyone looks at the SPY chart from 2 o'clock to 4 yesterday, it was absolutely nuts. And we feel the excitement down here. It comes out in our order flow. It comes out in our emotional reaction to the markets. And sort of we're in the room where it's happening. So it's for me, it's very exciting. I love these days.
What about the reaction this morning, though? We're seeing commodities all kind of taking a beating here. We talked about the banks yesterday. They're all continuing to go higher. What do you make of the market's reaction? So yes, it was nothing really was a surprise yesterday. Though I maintain, even if I had known exactly what he was going to say, I couldn't have told you what the market was going to do. I don't know if anyone could. So can you try your best to like justify these reactions here this morning?
Absolutely. So, you know,
it's hard. I admit that
it's a hard question, but yeah. Bottom line is, I'm a firm believer that the market tells you what it thinks of what happened. Okay. Basically, the market started at one point at 2 o'clock. What he said was exactly what people expected in so many ways about employment, about inflation, about interest rates and whatnot. And the market, while it was reactive and sold off hard down 250, it ended up closing around where it started, right? So that kind of means that the market feels sort of, half 55th. It's like even Steven. It's the old Jerry Seinfeld thing. You lose a 20, you find a 20. But today's reaction, look, the market's been trading a little bit sideways. We're seeing a little more of a pressure. And so the reading I did this morning to try and understand why the market did what it did, or why we're down here 100 points, and to your point of the banks being still up and the commodities sort of getting hit a little bit, is where we are in the economic recovery cycle. In the beginning of an economic recovery cycle, people are buying value and buying banks. In the middle section, they buy something else. And in the third section of recovery, they look at other sectors to invest in. So it kind of is making us feel, from interpreting what he said, that we're really very much grinding through the beginning state of the recovery, right? That there's still a lot of unknowns. We are by no means I don't believe in the middle of it yet. We don't, look, he anticipates 4.5 unemployment for next year. Well, that would be real. That would be a wonderful thing if that's all, if that's where we end up. Obviously, the inflation story will put some pressure on what's going on economically. The fact that people, to get them back to work, is going to be costing a little bit more money. Goods and services are obviously going up. Raising rates is going to put some pressure on the market. And it's not a recovery story without so many moving parts and unknowns. So I think that how the market's reacting here gives us the evaluation that we're in the beginning, very beginning stages of the recovery process, with a lot of unknowns and headwinds along the way.
And then anything else on your radar? I know you're always watching the indexes. We got the Russell rebalance coming up here next Friday. Anything on your radar for today, though?
Sure. Well, look, tomorrow is the Super Bowl of
Quadwitch. Exactly. Yeah. You know, let's talk about that. Let's talk about tomorrow. Quadwitch.
Okay. Look, we have the S&P rebalance. For me, that's the biggest. Russell rebalances are exciting there, even though they're more stocks in that index. They're not as significant and power play stocks as the S&P. So tomorrow is the quarterly rebalance of the S&P 500. It's actually, and it's a function of how much movement there's been. And I hope people should learn and read up about what a rebalance means. It's the indexers have to basically position themselves with certain amounts of each sector relative to valuation of each stock in their portfolios, depending on how big players they are in the indexes. So every quarter, we have them quarterly, and as the year goes on, the quarterly index rebalances get bigger and bigger. The bigger moves that we've seen from January to now, right, this is the second one of the year, is even bigger, because the more one moves from one index rebalance to the next, the more rebalancing they have to do.
Right.
So I saw the numbers for tomorrow. They're not incredibly large. They're probably, there are 500 stocks in that index. We trade about 378 of them here. People start getting into the trade. So people who have a position in, whether it's Apple or whether it's Bristol Myers or whatever stock it is, or whether they're big index players, they've got to either buy stock or sell stock relative to what the stock has done and relative to the positioning they're in their portfolios. So it's a net even trade, as fascinating as it is, because whatever goes in, there are other things that have to come out, right? But it is a big day. So we also have option expiration tomorrow, right?
Right.
So when these things happen at a lot of time, you have big volume. When you've got so many moving parts and so many things unknown, especially after a Fed meeting as the one that there was so much anticipation of, right? That whole thing we saw last week with Paul Tudor Jones talking about, I'm in the inflation trade, big, big, big. One of my buddies downtown, Josh Brown, said, guys, yes, that's his story. He's staying in the inflation trade. But how many of you's portfolios are at the same risk relative relationship that Paul Tudor Jones are, right? I'm not going to judge the way that I trade my portfolio, which I don't have one. relative to the way a billionaire is postured. Anyway, getting back to your story, it's the Super Bowl of Fridays, the S&P 500 rebalance, the second one of the year, the option expiration. We've seen it's probably not going to be as big as the first one we had in the first quarter because we've been trading sideways for a little bit here, right? Okay. So I don't know. We're sort of with a bit of a negative posture, right? The market did, you know, tip its hat almost at the 35,000 in the Dow level. The spot, the S&P is down a bit. So we've been a little bit on the darker side over the last couple of months. So I'm not really sure. We really need to see the next shoe to drop, whether we're going to go higher or lower from here. There may be some, there's definitely some consolidation going on, right? As you and I know, for people who trade in technical analysis, no matter what's going on in the market, up, down, sideways, there is opportunity, right, in these markets. And, but you know, as the gentlemen who were on the call before I came in, you know, these, you can, what we try and always teach is never turn a winning trade into a losing trade, right? And using risk management and stop orders, especially in a market like this, because even though the market's been trading sideways, there are stocks that are doing wild things. We did have a couple of weeks here where the meme stocks were really, you know, on fire once again, right? And there's some new players in the game. And these are murky waters to be trading in. So I beg everybody to tap into technical analysis. You know, you and I, we've collaborated on this Wall Street Global Trading Academy. I hope people get a shot at that. We're starting to do some fun things with masterclasses on risk management soon to come. We've got a Facebook group, but you know, we're between your content and your, you know, the great stuff that goes on at Benzinga and with our course, I think people have a little better of an edge, putting the probability in their favor to get a better outcome of trading this market, because it's really hard. This is not your grandfather's stock market that used to move. When I came down here, used to see the Dow move 2, 3, 4 points a day. That was a big deal, right? I was here on January 21st, 1987, which was then 183 million shares traded. It was the biggest day in history. Today, we're trading billions of shares a day worldwide, and the moves are multi 10, 20% moves in a stock intraday. So I beg everyone to not think this is a get rich quick scheme and be cautious.
All right. Peter Tuckman is the Einstein of Wall Street. He also runs Wall Street Global Trading Academy. The link is not only on the screen, it is also in the description of the video on YouTube. Peter, head back downstairs for the open and good luck today.
See you soon. Thanks, Spencer.
All right. It is 9:16. That is going to just about bring our show to an end. I want to hang for a few minutes because we do have Robert Roy is going to hop on at around 9:25 and talk about options strategies, options trading for the day, and walk you through how he sets up his day. So that'll be at 9:25 for about an hour. Speaking of options, I have a couple of housekeeping items to get to. I mentioned this yesterday, forgot to mention it the day before. We have a new tier, I guess you can call it, on our Benzinga Pro offering. We've got Benzinga Pro, right? You get access to all the features, all the bells and whistles, the screeners, the squawk, the newsfeed, all that stuff. We also have a Benzinga Pro Options Mentorship Program. It gives you everything on Benzinga Pro, plus more access to Nick Shaheen, who joins our show every other Tuesday. You get access to his chat room, his daily setups, his watch lists. I'm going to put the link in chat. Okay, here it is. Link going in chat right now. And the promo code to go with that link to get 70% off your very first month. And that's also in chat. Summer sale is the promo code. I'll put it in the other chat too, okay? I never forget about you guys. There's a link in that chat. Promo code Summer Sale. Again, this is for the Benzinga Pro Options Mentorship Program. If you don't know about options, then I would just tell you to check out our very next show with Robert Roy. He's really good at explaining the stuff simply and for people who don't have a detailed knowledge of options. And if you think, hey, this could be interesting, then check out the Benzinga Pro Options Mentorship Plan, link in chat, promo code Summer Sale, all caps. Somebody was keen to remind me this morning for the second day in a row. I forgot. I was going to do an experiment, and I forgot. So I'm going to tell you about my experiment now, and you all are going to hold me accountable. Here's the experiment. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to make the live chat for this show open to only Benzinga YouTube subscribers. It's very easy to subscribe. All you got to do is hit the subscribe button on YouTube and boom, you're subscribed. So tomorrow morning, I'm going to limit our live chat to just subscribers of the channel. If you're like, what the hell, I can't comment, just hit subscribe and you'll be able to comment. Really is that simple. So I'm telling you that now so I don't forget. I hope I don't forget. Tomorrow morning. That's the plan. If you haven't subscribed to Benzinga on YouTube, I highly recommend it. We just crossed the 100,000 subscriber threshold a couple of weeks ago. We are heading straight towards 200K as we speak. We got shows all day, every weekday, 8 a.m., some days as early as 7 a.m., and then some days as late as like 8:30 p.m. We're going like 12 hours a day live, all day. Today, you've got this show, obviously, almost over. Robert Roy, Options Explained, up next. You've got SPAC's Attack at 11 o'clock. You got the Power Hour, which is always great with Luke and Jason, at noon. You got Get Technical at 1 o'clock. Our BZ Crypto Show is on at 2. Biotech Buzz with Vivi. If you have a biotech question, I highly recommend you save it for Vivi at 2:30. I'll be doing a fireside chat later today with a company that's doing some really cool stuff, the Dream Exchange. We got the At the Close Show, Cannabis Hour, which I am co-hosting today. That's right. We have a wedding on the Benzinga cannabis team. So a few people are out for that. So I'm going to be filming in, co-hosting with Javier Haas, the Cannabis Hour at 4 o'clock today. We got After Hours with Ryan Rosebiani. And we got Chance Trades, Money Mitch as well. Money Mitch and then Chance Trades wrapping up at 6:30. The schedule should be on our Twitter page, as it should be every day. So we got a full schedule today, as we do every day. All right, what else did I want to mention? Housekeeping items. I mentioned the options thing. I mentioned the cannabis hour, and I mentioned the chat experiment that we're going to do tomorrow. I think that was all I had on the housekeeping front. Yes, I'm pretty sure it was. Just doing one last check, because every day there's something that I forget to say. I don't want to forget. No, I think I got all of it. Okay, let me catch up on chat. I'm going to hop off the stream in like 2 minutes here, and Robert Roy is going to start right up, and he's going to go. So, Raz needs to give you a raise. I will pass the message along. Damon, thank you very much. Where can I hear Benzinga AMC predictions? All right, how is AMC doing? We didn't really talk AMC today for that. It's so quiet, right? It's only fun to talk about when it's going up a lot or down a lot. It's so quiet. Let's go to open up Benzinga Pro. Go to AMC. Just go to a chart. 15-minute, it's just so quiet overnight. I'm still biased towards the long side, right, on AMC. As long as it holds up here, I see no reason to throw in the towel. And I maintain that stance. I said that yesterday, I think, if not the day before. I maintain that stance. As long as it holds up, you know, I would say as long as it stays within this range of what's that, 30... What is that? 30 something? 37? No. 35? That 30, as long as it holds up above like 35, that range from a couple weeks ago, or that low, then I'm biased to the long side on AMC. I'm not smart enough to give you a specific prediction. Whoever was asking. Sorry. What else? No, I think that I'm just catching up on chat. I know there is more tickers. We didn't get to all of them. Somebody mentioned Intel. We talked about that yesterday. Somebody mentioned the Trade Desk. Oh, Texas Linda. I'm going to write that down, the Trade Desk. And I'm going to write down TAN, and I'm going to write down Fuel Cell. Get these on the list. We'll cover these at the close at 3:30. So Fuel Cell, TAN, the Trade Desk, we have not talked about for a while.
Anything else I should write down just so we cover it at the close? Neo, we talked about Neo like every day, it feels like. We definitely talked about it yesterday. CCIV, gosh, we talked about that too. SPG, we definitely didn't we hit on SPG? Or no, that was SPI, right? That was SPI. All right, we'll talk about CVS, sure. We'll hit on CVS at the close. We'll hit on these guys. RSLS, it's not one that I'm familiar with. Very little volume overall. A lot. What happened yesterday? That's unusual volume. Let's do this real fast, and then I'm going to hop off because Robert Roy is about to start. Reshape Life Sciences. I don't know this one. Is it a smaller market cap? Probably. At $31 million. A little small for our blood. A little small for our blood. Whoever dropped RSLS in there. Mandy. Okay. 924. I'm going to hop. Guys, drop us a like if you can. We appreciate that. Thank you to both our guests today. Thanks to both Peter and Scott Shalady, a.k.a. the Cow Guy. We appreciate them both. We appreciate all of you hanging out with us this morning. Without you, it would just be Dennis and Joel and I just arguing, and Mitch arguing to each other, which is fine. But it's always more fun when we have people in watching and engaging and listening. If you missed this show, the replay is available every day on YouTube. If you wanted to listen to the show in podcast form, you can do that. We're on all the major podcast platforms, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're on every major platform. Check us out there. Please remember, all the information from our show is meant to be used as informational purposes, not for investing or trading advice. Opinions expressed do not represent those of Benzinga. And on that note, I'm going to hop off. We are 5 minutes till the open. Robert Roy should be starting up in a minute. I will see you guys over there. Good luck at the open. And we'll see you later.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.